DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Coming up in just a moment, I want to give you all of the details about how you can be with us tonight for our Dog Nation Big Game Preview at the Marlowe's Tavern in Brookhaven, and how maybe you have a chance to be the winner of our Dog Nation Invasion giveaway to Baton Rouge, courtesy of our friends at Marlowe's Tavern. That's all coming up here in just a couple of minutes. Before that, though, I was kind of looking at the show sheet, and we kind of put together a little bit of a rundown before the show each and every day here. And right before we were going on the air, I was kind of looking at some of the topics we have planned for a discussion here today. And I guess there's kind of a theme to a lot of this here today, and it's going to end up being this. Am I crazy? Am I a homer? Or does this sort of seem like a problem here? You'll hear me sort of ask some version of that question here a lot. Part of it about a Georgia player in a moment. A little bit on the team in general for right now, though. And this is something I'll admit is a bit of a sensitive issue for me, something that I've kind of railed on in the past. There is a guy named Tony Miller, who I couldn't pick out of a lineup. I have no idea who this is. But he tweets about the Golden Nugget Sportsbook in Las Vegas. That is a sportsbook that I do know something about. The Golden Nugget's generally a pretty good college football sports book. They are, for instance, the famous sports book that does the games of the year in July every year, kind of a look ahead to all the big college football games. They're sort of famous for doing that. Some sports books have kind of tried to jump in line in front of them a little bit here over the last couple of years, but the Golden Nugget sort of carved out that niche for itself quite a long time ago, so they have a bit of a voice when it comes to college football, and they have some look ahead, way too early lines here about how things would potentially go for Alabama if it matched up in the college football playoff national championship game against a slew of the top contenders, Georgia included. Tony Miller here has tweeted about this. If you're watching on video, I want to show this to you. If you're listening, I'll obviously read it and describe it the way we always do here. Tony writes on Twitter, Alabama versus the world. College football championship game odds now posted at the Golden Nugget Las Vegas. Alabama would be a 9.5-point favorite versus Ohio State. Alabama would be a 10.5-point favorite versus Georgia. More on that in a moment. Alabama, 11.5-point favorite over Clemson, and a 14.5-point favorite Alabama would be over the Oklahoma Sooners. Now, I tweeted this yesterday. If you follow me on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily, you may be seeing this and may have seen this yesterday. Many of you had the same response to this that I had. 10.5? Really? Is Georgia really a 10.5-point underdog to anybody right now? The Alabama Crimson Tide included here. And obviously, listen, you don't have to go very far on some Alabama message board to think that they, Bama fans think that'll be favored by 20.5. I mean, listen, there's certainly a whatever clothes you wear to work. I wear a lot of red and black clothes. If you wear crimson, is it cream or white? Whatever their deal is. If you're wearing those clothes to work every day, you probably maybe think a little something different here. But as I said, is this me just being crazy? Am I not paying attention to how good Alabama really is? Am I just sort of seeing the world through red and black glasses here? Such a Georgia homer that 10.5 seems obscene to me, because it absolutely does. It seems incredibly obscene. Now, the people in Las Vegas would say, well, then come get you some then and put some money down on that right now. But so I guess that's my opportunity to put my money where my mouth is if I really feel as strongly about it as I do. But this is one of those things that I just think is an overwhelming knee-jerk reaction. Now, I guess the giant addendum to this entire discussion is, from Georgia's perspective, this is probably a good thing. I mean, how many times in this program have we played that silly audio from Nick Saban talking about rat poison from a year ago? Well, folks, this is rat poison. This is as rat poison as it gets right here. A double-digit favorite essentially over the four best teams in all of college football. If you're Alabama, you don't get more rat poison than that. And the fact that Georgia, for the most part, is avoiding all of that is probably good for the team in general. But, you know, as we say all the time around here, this is the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. This is not the huddle that all the reporters get in and talk to each other about. This is the show where we sort of congregate as fans and sort of have this sort of conversation sort of outside the bubble from time to time. And one of the things I do hear from fans a lot is a certain level of annoyance with, you know, the way that the media seems to be sort of piling on Alabama more so than ever before, and in some respects, maybe that's coming at the expense of Georgia. And maybe we all find out in January that this really is just the greatest team of all time, that Georgia was really good in a very bad year to be really good, in a year where Alabama, led by Tua Tagovailoa, and this offense is apparently going to score a million points a game, that that's just a really bad year to be really, really good because Alabama is one of the great teams of all time. That maybe, you know, blowing out every team and scoring 40-plus points a game for Georgia is just not quite good enough at a time when Alabama's blowing everybody out and scoring 50 points a game. Maybe that's the case. But I do think there's at least a little bit of evidence to suggest that maybe this is a bit of an overreaction here. Now, my guess is on these way too early lines, they're not taking a whole lot of heavy action on that. If you try to make a big bet, my guess is the Golden Nugget would probably refuse it. So this is not one of those deals where they probably feel all that strongly about this as of yet. But nonetheless, I mean, I do think there are a couple things to sort of point out here on this runaway train of praise for Alabama here on the virtue of beating Louisville and Ole Miss and whoever else that they played. A couple things to point out here. You know, we do have a slight piece of evidence of how these two teams would play when they matched up, and while it's much to the lament of Georgia fans that they lost in January, it was not by some gigantic margin. If anything, Georgia's the one that had the big lead early in the game and saw it slip away there late. Now, I'm not telling you that's a moral victory that Georgia ought to be proud of, but it would at least seem to be a data point to suggest that maybe favoring Alabama by 10.5 points over Georgia is a bit of an exaggeration here at the moment. The other thing I will say is, and this is maybe a slightly more analytic point, I saw where Brian Fremo the other day, who's one of these advanced stats analytics guys, I like quoting these folks from time to time. Some of his numbers there for Football Outsiders, he had likelihood of going undefeated in the regular season. Georgia was actually tops on his list in terms of being able to do that at 38%. Alabama was just number two at 30%. So the 10.5 point favorite here is not even the most likely of the two to go undefeated during the regular season, at least according to a guy that has no dog in this fight whatsoever and is a bit of a number cruncher. Now, the immediate pushback on that is, well, now hold on, BA. Alabama plays in the rugged SEC West, and Georgia's in the pillow fight that is the SEC East. That may be true, at least in some respects. I would invite you to point this out, though, that there is maybe right now no terrible team in the SEC East. Kentucky just beat Florida. Vanderbilt just played close against Notre Dame on the road. Have you seen Arkansas as of late? So there's at least one terrible team in the SEC West. And on paper, Alabama's two toughest games remaining at LSU, home versus Auburn, is a carbon copy as well of Georgia's two toughest games. Now, the one thing Alabama does have to do still is play Mississippi State. Folks, Georgia beat Mississippi State 37-3 a year ago, so or 31-3, whatever it was. Now, obviously, Georgia's lost a lot since then, but through three games, on the road including a ranked South Carolina opponent, I think thus far, any questions about Georgia replacing its departed stars from a year ago, for the most part, that's all been answered. And also, it's probably worth pointing out that none of this matters at all. This is essentially a fictitious point spread about a game that actually hasn't even been scheduled yet. I'll certainly admit I'm getting sort of, the cart well in front of the horse on all of this. But let's face it, in a year in which Georgia's going to win most of its games in blowout fashion, comparing its blowouts to Alabama's blowouts may be about the only thing worth talking about sometimes in terms of this inevitable clash between these two teams in December and what very well might be a rematch in January. Luckily, though, while I get sort of fixated on this stuff from time to time, Kirby Smart's not worried about any of this. When he was asked this week during his weekly press conference what his thoughts were and how Georgia sort of fits into the conversation and the rest of the division, the rest of the conference, as you might imagine, Kirby Smart showing that laser focus for which he's famous.
We're focused 100% on Missouri because we know what they've done. We know how we felt during the game last year when there were some times they were really explosive on us, and we've got to go out and focus on playing these guys. As far as rest of the SEC East or SEC, I can't tell you. I'm not concerned with it. I'm really focused on the challenges that Missouri presents, which is really big physical players, experienced quarterback, a tough place to play, all the combinations that you look for. They've got good players at each position.
And that is obviously, if you're a fan, exactly what you want to hear your coach say. And as I guess a way of sort of wrapping up this entire conversation, if I'm right and Georgia really is keeping pace with Alabama a little bit better than some of the national reporters or Las Vegas odds makers seem to be suggesting they are, if Georgia really is doing a better job of keeping pace than people outside Dog Nation realize, then Saturday does become a day to prove that. Georgia will go on the road as about, 14.5-point favorite the last time I saw it at my bookie. About a 14.5-point favorite or so. I'm not sure the line settled in at right now, but it's been around two touchdowns all week, give or take one side or the other of that. Georgia will go on the road as a big favorite and really flex its muscles and blow out Missouri again. That's sort of what I assume that's going to happen. If it doesn't, if Georgia plays Missouri close, that's not likely the thing that Alabama would do right now, which maybe makes the odds makers who've put a gap between Georgia and Alabama look a whole lot smarter. My guess is, though, Georgia will continue to validate its performances week after week after week. And when these two teams do show down in December in Atlanta for the SEC championship, my guess is Georgia's going to play a lot better than some of the folks in Las Vegas expect. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Good to have you with us. Live on video, 10 a.m. Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter feed, on the radio at noon with my friends in the Classic City on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref and in podcast form. Pretty much wherever you can find podcasts, you can find Dog Nation Daily, the Apple Podcast Player, the Google Podcast Player for the Android devices, the world-famous DogNation.com, SoundCloud, everything else. Just really, really glad to have you here on Dog Nation Daily today, presented by Marco's Pizza. And speaking of Marco's Pizza, got another tweet yesterday from somebody. And, you know, one of the things I describe a lot, I wish I had this tweet, I'd show it to you on screen. I talk about on Sundays, you know, after a long day of college football on Saturday, which I dearly love, but also leaves me entirely depleted. There's nothing else I love more than sort of sit on the couch, you know, pajamas on, you know, Marco's pizza box in the lap, and just watching a little, you know, NFL, you know, red zone, whatever else. And somebody actually sent me a picture of themselves yesterday doing exactly that with the Marco's pizza right there in their lap. I love to see that. I'm sure they took advantage of a great offer. Two medium, two topping pizzas for $6.99 each. It's every store, every day, the Italian way at Marco's.com. I'll be very, very blunt. The fact that so many of you have chosen to support Marco's Pizza is awesome for us here at Dog Nation Daily, because Marco's is a huge supporter of us and a huge fan of all of you in Dog Nation. They are great, great partners, and I appreciate you partnering with them the same way that you partner here with Dog Nation Daily every single day. Before we get back to some stuff involving Georgia football, let me also mention one more thing here to you. I am really excited about tonight. You know, this is one of those great moments in which we get to sort of get out of this box, this studio that we do this show from each and every day, and kind of get into the real world here and talk to some real folks about their feelings about Georgia. We call it our Dog Nation Big Game Preview, and we're looking ahead tonight to the game against Missouri at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven from 6 to 8 p.m. It's all going down, Marlowe's Brookhaven, 3575 Durden Drive in Atlanta. If you're listening, I'm going to say this address for you one more time. It's 3575 Durden Drive in Atlanta. Write that down. We'll see you tonight, 6 p.m. at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven. Obviously, I'm going to be there. Our buddy Mike Griffith from Dog Nation is going to be there. Many of you want to sort of see him at a Dog Nation event. Some of you want to kind of corner him and give him a piece of your mind. But nonetheless, you want to see Mike Griffith tonight. That's going to be a lot of fun right there at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven. That's going to be great. And in addition to that, here's the thing I'm the most excited about. We are going to announce live tonight the winner of our Dog Nation Invasion to Baton Rouge, courtesy of Marlowe's Tavern, a winner and a guest on their way to the big trip with us coming up in October. We'll announce the winner of that tonight, and if you show up at the Marlowe's Tavern, you got one more chance to register and get yourself included in that giveaway, that drawing, for your chance to win. That's going to be really great stuff tonight. Marlowe's in Brookhaven at 6 p.m. I hope that I get a chance to see you there, and if I do, please come up and say hello to me, because I'd love to shake your hand and say thanks for your support of Dog Nation. All right, with all of that out of the way, I said off the top of the program that kind of one of the themes today is going to be, am I crazy? Now, there may be a lot of reasons to ask if I'm crazy on a given day, but I think this is another example. Jordan Rodgers, who I don't have any kind of beef or gripe typically with whatsoever, had his ranking on Twitter of the SEC quarterbacks. Now, I want to show you the ranking here in particular, and I want you to see how low on this list that Jake Fromm is. It's Tua Tagovailoa 1, Drew Locke 2, that's who Georgia plays this week, Nick Fitzgerald 3, Kellen Mond 4, Kyle Shermer, the Vanderbilt quarterback 5, then you get to Jake Fromm 6th, one stop ahead of Jared Stidham at 7. Now, I see a red arrow pointing up next to Fromm's name. I'm assuming that means that he moved up on the list after Middle Tennessee State, a game in which he barely played. So before last week, Fromm was no better than 7th on this list, which I think is incredibly insane on the part of Jordan Rodgers here. He obviously got a lot of pushback from a lot of Georgia fans on Twitter, some other folks, and he goes on to go into Fromm a little bit more. Let me show you another one of these tweets where he's kind of explaining why Kyle Shurmur, the Vanderbilt quarterback, ranked ahead of Jake Fromm. Rodgers says, "I would argue if you put Shurmur on Georgia with the talent around him, running game and defense, you would have a much different perception of him. And if Fromm was on Vandy having to carry the load with no running game and an average SEC defense at best, he would have very different numbers." I agree with Rodgers on that. Fromm's numbers would be very different. But am I crazy to say that if Fromm was on a team where he was asked to throw the ball a lot more, he'd have much higher numbers? He's completing 80% of his passes for more than, what, almost 10.5 yards per attempt right now. I'm talking about yards per attempt, not just yards per completion, but yards per attempt. I would suggest on a more pass-happy offense, you would see a whole different version of Fromm. But Rodgers wasn't done. He goes on to say that he doesn't even think that Fromm's going to get drafted when he leaves Georgia. Here's what Rodgers says. "I would put money on that. Aaron Murray was a similar build but way more talented and put up all-time numbers in the SEC. Was still only a fifth-round pick and didn't stick in the NFL. Jordan Rodgers says that Jake Fromm is an undrafted free agent from a skill standpoint. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Now, ultimately, I don't really care if Fromm goes on to a great NFL career or not because I'm not that big of an NFL fan. I'd love to see Fromm make a bunch of money and become, you know, a sort of a household name there. For me, it's more about the stuff at Georgia. And for me, I think Jordan Rodgers is completely underrating what Jake Fromm's doing in a Georgia uniform. That's my opinion on that. Here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza, let's talk to David Green about that right now. And I will say hello to my good buddy David Green here, of course, doing great things all around the state of Georgia. And one of the things we love when David Green comes on our program is to hear a little bit about what's going on at Tailgate Apparel. Of course, before every home game, they've been hosting a lot of other former Georgia greats. Had a great time last week, Boss Bailey, Terrence Edwards, before the Middle Tennessee State game. 2 weeks from now, we've got the Tennessee game. I know that's going to be another big day for Tailgate Apparel. We'll look forward to hearing more from David on that in a moment. Though, David, before we get into any of that, let me say hello to you, and thanks for being a part of our program here today. How are you doing?
Doing good, Brandon. Good to be on, as always, buddy.
Yeah, good to have you as well. And a lot I want to talk to you about, but obviously you are a former quarterback, so I'm always sort of curious to get your opinion as a quarterback. And an SEC Network analyst had, you know, kind of sort of unfavorably compared Jake Fromm to some other SEC quarterbacks. And I'll be the first to tell you, David, that everyone's got a right to their opinion, and I think people backing up their own opinion with their own thoughts is, you know, kind of interesting. That's what I like doing. You know, that's just sort of the fun debate that, you know, happens around college football. So I don't have a problem with someone, you know, saying anything they want to say about Jake Fromm necessarily, but I guess by way of question, my specific issue here is the suggestion that somehow if Fromm was on a lesser team, we would think less of him. And I sort of think that if Fromm was on a lesser team or a team that was maybe a little bit different stylistically or just a little bit different personnel, he might get to throw more. We might actually think more of him. Am I wrong for feeling that way?
Yeah, no, I don't think you're wrong at all. And look, if you put any quarterback on a lesser team, you're going to think less of him. I mean, let's face it. I mean, this is if you don't have an offensive line that's going to give you time to block, if you don't have receivers that can make plays, yes, of course, as a quarterback, you're not going to perform as well. I mean, it's not just you as a quarterback. I mean, it takes everybody working together. You got to have players around you to be successful. But look, you're going to have to look very, very hard to find a knock on what Jake Fromm has done so far since he's been to Georgia. I mean, as a true freshman, to be able to take his team all the way to the national championship game and really put us in a position where we could have definitely won the game. You know, what he's done so far this year, I mean, has he even played in, you know, the fourth quarter of a ball game this year? I really think it's a stretch to point out any kind of negative of what he's been able to do thus far in his career.
So let me take it back to Georgia on the field for this particular Saturday, and it looks like one of the storylines here against Missouri is going to be, once again, Georgia playing without Andrew Thomas, who, and I'm obviously making a bit of a guess here, given the fact that we haven't seen a ton from Thomas in practice this week. Now, the good thing for Georgia, David, as you know, is Cade Mays, a former five-star. He's going to probably be a very good offensive lineman at a certain point, but Thomas was the starter for a reason. Georgia seemingly missing something if it doesn't have him. As a quarterback yourself, how is your sort of mental approach to a game a little different if you don't have that security blanket on that blind side there? Mays is good. Thomas is probably a little bit more of a comfort zone for Fromm, though. As a former quarterback, how would you suggest and guess that Fromm's probably feeling about that right now?
Well, I think Fromm, he'll be fine. Look, you got to trust the system. You got to trust your players, and I think it's one of those scenarios. If they're concerned about how Cade's going to do, they'll probably adjust. They'll probably either get some help with the tight end. You'll maybe chipping with the running back just to try to help out a little bit. So, one thing they're not going to do, they're just not going to leave him on the island if he's not ready for that moment. I don't think that's going to be the case. Look, Cade was highly recruited. He's played some this year, and appears to have done a good job so far. So I think it's one of those scenarios that if they have any concerns, Cade in a one-on-one situation, there's different things that you can do, like I said, with backs or tight ends to get some other help. That way, Jake's got plenty of time to, step up and make a good throw.
As a way of following up on that for a moment, if I look back to you in 2002, you had a great offensive line, certainly very good offensive line, a lot of veteran guys. They gave you plenty of time to throw. They opened a bunch of holes for Musa Smith. In 2003, I think by the end of the year, that group had kind of gelled a bit. But early in the season, there were some new starters there, and they were trying to figure some things out for you. When you compare yourself with different offensive lines that you played with, when an offensive line was really in sync and really in rhythm, did that sort of increase your confidence that you go into a game sort of knowing I'm going to have time to throw here, which therefore is going to make me more likely to have success? How much was your confidence enhanced when you really trusted that offensive line that you were playing in behind?
Look, the offensive line is the most important position. There's no question on the offense. Because from a quarterback, when you can hand the ball off and you got a threat in the running game, it totally opens up the passing game because, defense has got to start bringing more guys in the box to bring in safeties down. And if you've got good receivers out wide, it's putting those corners in a situation where they got to win one-on-one matchups. And so you're really putting you're putting the corners and the perimeter guys in a pretty big bind if you got a really good running game. And then when it comes, time to throw, there's nothing worse as a quarterback to be in a third and long situation where everybody knows that you're throwing. And you got to have trust in your linemen. They're going to win their matchups and give you enough time for those routes to develop because, sometimes you got to get 10, 15 yards down the field, the receivers do before you can cut the ball loose. And so, I was fortunate enough. I had great offensive linemen. We had plenty of guys that went to the pros. You talk about that offensive line in 2002. That was a really, really good offensive line group. And we had, a couple guys that went. I know George Foster went. He got drafted early. He had, John Stinchcomb, second rounder as well. And that's really where it all starts. As a quarterback, you want to make sure the big boys up front, are there because, your best friend is those guys and having a good running game. That's what's going to open up that passing game.
I know your weekends are pretty busy. You're chasing your kids around doing stuff just like everybody else is. I don't know how much you've gotten to see of Missouri quarterback Drew Locke, but he has a chance to be a first-round pick this spring. Obviously, Kirby Smart had some really complimentary words about Locke when he's spoken to reporters here this week. Have you seen much of Locke? Do you have certain aspects of his game that you like?
Well, there's no question. You talk about a gunslinger. Drew Locke, he can make any throw. I was at the game last year at home when he just carved us up. The one thing I think we got to do, and really the only concern I've had for Georgia, I think, so far this year, is I don't have a great feel of our defense yet, and there's a lot of new faces out there, and it's going to be a big test this weekend. We got to find a way to get pressure on this quarterback because he will be, probably the best passer that we face all year long. And so we got to find a way to get pressure on him, make him uncomfortable, because if he just stands back there and, we play zone coverage and give him time to throw, he will pick us apart, pretty much like he did last year. So we definitely got to find a way to get some heat on him.
That's been a hot topic all week, David, because of the fact that Georgia, statistically speaking, just hasn't produced a lot of sacks this year. Kirby Smart's sort of downplayed that because of the offenses that Georgia's played thus far. And I guess there's also kind of a school of thought here against Drew Locke as well. one of the things he has not always done well with is he doesn't always have a very high completion percentage, that maybe you just sort of put guys back in coverage and sort of, you know, narrow the windows in which Locke can throw here. I think, though, the lion's share of Georgia fans probably agree with you, though, of, hey, if you're facing a good quarterback, don't make his job easy by giving him time to throw. Kind of get in there and rattle his cage a little bit. I would imagine as a quarterback you'd say that's something that's made you uncomfortable in the past when somebody did have a hand in your face or, you know, breathing down your neck. It makes it harder to want to throw the football. It sounds like you're saying a recipe for Georgia on Saturday would be to do the same thing to Drew Locke.
Yeah, you don't want to allow him to get in rhythm, because when he starts feeling good like he did last year in the first half, I mean, he was making NFL-type throws. The one thing you got to do is you got to put him in a position where he can't set his feet or he's not on timing, because that's what creates inaccurate throws is when you can't set your feet and throw on rhythm. And so we just got to find ways to just get him uncomfortable where he doesn't have a nice, clean pocket, because he's more accurate and he's got a stronger arm than most kids that we're going to see, you know, all season long. And so, yeah, I'm all about getting him out of rhythm and don't let him set his feet this week, because if he does, you know, it could – I mean, there's times we could have good coverage and they could still make the big play because he's got that big of an arm.
I want to finish with a chat about tailgate apparel in downtown Athens for next Saturday before the Tennessee game. Before that, though, let me squeeze in one quick final question. You know, David, last week you said, hey, for the players, playing a game at noon is probably not that big of a deal. You know, their body clocks are going to be kind of okay with that. How about 11 a.m. Central, which is what Georgia's going to do on Saturday against Missouri? I don't remember how many 11 a.m. local times you played back during your career. And I mean this in all sincerity. Is there any difference when you're, like, in the Central time zone and you're playing an 11 a.m. kick there? What does that do for Georgia, for the good, for the bad? Does it not even matter at all?
Yeah, it didn't really matter. I would say one time zone difference is not a big deal. Now, if you live in Seattle and you go and play in Atlanta, that could be a different deal.
Sure.
Because your body clock is off. But 1 hour difference is really not that big of a deal. And like I said, these guys, and you could tell last week, I mean, changing the game time, I mean, guys came out ready to play and the whole deal. It's not going to make a difference. And I remember back in the day, Brandon, when I was playing, it was the old, remember the old Jefferson Pilot games, right?
Oh, yeah.
That was the noon game.
Oh, yeah.
JP. And yeah, I think we did play a couple 11 o'clock games. And it is earlier. I mean, look, I think as a player, you typically, you know, and fans like that night game environment. But sometimes as a player, it was nice getting up and playing early because there was nothing worse than just sitting around all day as well in a hotel watching other games play while you're just kind of sitting around and, you know, getting ready to play. So there were times where I enjoyed, you know, playing the earlier game. That way you can get up just and get going.
Well, passing time before kickoff is not just something the players have to deal with. Fans have to deal with it as well. Next Saturday, Georgia-Tennessee is a 3:30 start. And for the fans who are looking to sort of pass some time before that game begins, Tailgate Apparel in downtown Athens is one of the best places to do that. 279 East Broad Street. It's right there in the old Harry Business Building. And one of the things, David, people reach out to me about all the time is, hey, at Tailgate Apparel, who's going to be signing autographs? What's going to be going on there pregame? People like to sort of get in there, sort of get into the air conditioning for a little bit, kind of get out of the heat, which has been so oppressive thus far this season there in Athens. They love to get that tailgate apparel. It's great looking stuff, and I know it's going to be another big day before the Tennessee game next Saturday as well.
Well, there's no question. Now, you know, fans, unfortunately, they got to downgrade a little bit for Tennessee because they're going to have me coming in for the signing. I'm going to be in there from 1:30 to kickoff. I think it's a 3:30 kick. I would typically be there earlier, but my son's got a game, so I'll probably be there, you know, coming in on two wheels at 1:30. And I'm trying, it's not confirmed yet, but I'm trying to get my boy Veron Haynes.
Yeah.
If he's planning on coming to the game, I'm going to try to get V to see if he can come in as well, and we can do one together.
Oh, yeah.
So that'll be a lot of fun. But I'll definitely be there from 1:30 to 3:30. And I'll let you know next week as well if we get Veron locked in.
Well, I know you're a humble guy. You don't like talking about signing your own autographs here, but I do have to ask you, over the years, you mentioned Veron Haynes. How many Hobnail Boot, Georgia-Tennessee 2001, prints, paintings, you know, sculptures, how many of those would you say you probably signed over the years, David?
It's amazing. I'll tell you what's fun is just hearing the stories because it's one of those games that, you know, most fans kind of remember where they were at when that game happened.
Oh, yeah.
And just hearing stories from people that say, hey, you know, my dad got so upset. When they scored, they thought we lost, and he threw the TV out the window, and we never saw the ending. And, you know, I hear so many different stories from different fans over the year. It's just, you know, it's pretty neat, too, Brandon, because, you know, I go and sit in the stands now, and I've got 10-year-old, 7-year-old, and 1-year-old, and they'll still see the play on the Jumbotron. And I would have never thought, you know, I guess it was almost, you know, 17, 18 years ago now that play, you know, that day would be something special. It's pretty neat.
Yeah, David, that's awesome stuff. And I can tell you it's one of my proudest memories as a fan. So I appreciate your role in that and appreciate you being willing to talk about it right now. It's always fun to have you here on Dog Nation Daily. We'll look forward to hearing more about what's going to happen at Tailgate Apparel next week. We'll look forward to seeing you there next Saturday as well. A really, really fun event there before the Georgia-Tennessee game. Couldn't be better timing. David, we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good, buddy.
So really good stuff there from David Green, the former Georgia quarterback, and he's right about this. And listen, you know, David's one of these guys, he, like a lot of us, he doesn't necessarily want to talk about himself necessarily. But I did have to ask him that about, you know, I mean, you just know, right? I mean, and I think most of us would you know, kill to have a big moment like that, that sort of everybody has this great fond memory of, this great thing. And for David, among many, but the moment against Tennessee in 2001 is obviously one that is still, when they play that, you know, sort of video package before every game, that's still one that gets one of the biggest ovations, despite the fact that, what is it, 2018 now, so that was that 17 years ago, I guess? 17 years ago, and yet, and that means that for freshmen at the University of Georgia right now, they were barely even born when that happened, which makes me feel so old, y'all. Come on. But still, it's still a huge and a very fond memory. Probably the best seats I ever had for an away game was that Georgia-Tennessee game in 2001, kind of right there beside the red coat band, tucked in that corner of the lower level of Neyland Stadium and right in front of the end zone where Green threw the ball to Verron Haynes. I can see it as clear as a bell, you know, from a close range where I was sitting. That was the same day, actually, that my wife picked out her wedding dress, believe it or not. So she picked that out that Friday, and then we got in the car and headed for Knoxville after that. So that was always be a memory that I have very, very vivid recollections of. And one of those moments that sort of led me to believe that Mark Richt was sort of heading for a special career at Georgia. And he had a special career at Georgia, by the way. It may not have ultimately ended up being exactly what he wanted to be, what many of us wanted to be. And it may stand the test of time as being somewhat less than what Kirby Smart's building at Georgia. But Richt won two SEC championships. And I think the sort of foreshadowing of all of that, all the big wins that would come over the next few years, it started in an otherwise somewhat mediocre season in 2001, beating a top 10 team on the road back when beating Tennessee was a very big deal for Georgia. So great memories from David Green, and I know you'll love recollecting a lot of that with him next Saturday at Tailgate Apparel right there in downtown Athens.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Always really fun to have David Green here on a Dog Nation Daily presented by Margo's Pizza. And I know you'll look forward to seeing him next Saturday at a Tailgate Apparel in downtown Athens. Stories, autographs, everything else. Always really fun stuff there. It's really cool to be able to have David on Dog Nation Daily. And how about David throwing his hat into the ring of the is Georgia getting enough sacks or not conversation, without maybe necessarily meaning to, and I don't want to, you know, necessarily stir the pot on that, but he definitely said, hey, it's time to see Georgia get after a quarterback here. Drew Locke will be a pretty good one for the Dogs to get after there, so pretty good stuff from David on that. We got a lot more on Georgia to come, including some thoughts from Kirby Smart on Missouri quarterback Drew Locke here in a moment. For now, though, as we do our SEC through, let's do our MyBookie Best Bets segment. We do this every Thursday here on Dog Nation Daily. And, of course, MyBookie is the sports book that we talk about here on Dog Nation Daily. And the reason we talk about them so much is for a few reasons. Fast, no-hassle payout when you win. It's the place that really only Dog Nation, the only, you know, sports book that we would ever sort of point you in the direction of here, because, listen, when you win, you want the money, right? You don't have to wait forever and forever and forever to get your account updated. You want to be able to take care of that right away, and MyBookie is great about doing that. That's why we like them, and another reason why so many Dog Nation Daily listeners and viewers have liked them over the years is because of the promo code they give to us. Use the promo code DOGNATION, spelled exactly the way it should be, D-A-W-G, all one word, promo code DOGNATION. Your first deposit can be matched dollar for dollar, but you got to use the promo code DOGNATION. So find MyBookie online, M-Y-B-O-O-K-I-E. Find MyBookie online, use the promo code DOGNATION, and you're already a winner before you start. You get the deposit match there and the account there, and then you, after that, the steps are very simple. Play, win, get paid. That's why folks like MyBookie, including us here at Dog Nation Daily, and good luck to you this weekend. And with that in mind, let's talk about some of these games, our MyBookie best bets. Some pretty big point spreads in the SEC for the games that matter. Let me start with Texas A&M going to Alabama on Saturday. You know, I've seen that at around 26.5 this week. You know, obviously you're going to want to check those numbers and lines up to the minute yourself to kind of see, you know, what it is as of the time that you're looking for it. But we're going to go with 26.5 here for Alabama as a home favorite against Texas A&M. Alabama on the road last week obviously scored 62 points. I don't typically like teams the week after scoring 60-plus or a very high point total. The problem here is you've also got a bit of a letdown factor for Texas A&M as well on the heels of its close loss to Clemson. A lot of pats on the back for A&M there in that regard. I think Kellen Mond is the kind of quarterback that could potentially give Alabama some grief. For the most part, overall, this is sort of a stay-away game for me. I think A&M beats somebody this year. I don't think it's Alabama. I'm not even sure they keep it close. The question is, does Alabama win by, you know, the full, like, you know, four-touchdown, five-touchdown spread here? I don't know about that quite as much. This overall is a stay-away for me. If I was in a pool, though, where I had to pick it, I guess I'm taking Alabama minus the points right now. The opponents most likely to challenge Alabama are, you know, still a team like Auburn, more so than Texas A&M. So if I had to pick it, I'd take Alabama. For the most part, this is a stay away for me. I do have a fairly strong play, though, on the South Carolina-Vanderbilt game. Vanderbilt is at home as a 2.5-point underdog the week after, kind of gaining a little bit of steam for playing relatively close against Notre Dame. South Carolina has no juice whatsoever because they just got blown out by Georgia. This is a classic correction game. And Vanderbilt seems to play one of these every single year. Last year, it was to the tune of losing to Alabama about 59-0. Obviously, South Carolina is not good enough to go into Nashville and beat Vanderbilt that bad. But are they good enough to go into Nashville and win convincingly? I believe they probably are here. They're a favorite for a reason. I think they make the point spread completely irrelevant, though. This is the kind of thing that feels like a two-touchdown win for South Carolina. Go up and down the South Carolina roster. Look at the receivers. Look at even the young defensive backs playing for the Gamecocks secondary here. You know, to say nothing of the Kyle Shermer versus Jake Bentley comparison. I think this is an easy win for South Carolina. I think the point spread here making the Doors only a narrow underdog on the road. I think that's a total overreaction to the start of the season here. I believe the Gamecocks are my bookie best bet despite being on the road here. Kentucky-Mississippi State is a hard game to pick. Kentucky is a big underdog at home here against the Bulldogs. And if you've listened to me over the course of the entirety of the offseason leading into the start of this season, I'm nowhere near as high on Mississippi State as everyone else is. I just think there's a sort of a lot of stuff given to Mississippi State on the hills of very little evidence and the fact that typically first-year coaches have a little bit of a hard time in the SEC. And yet in this game, the one thing I can't get over, though, is Mississippi State's defensive line is virtually as good as anyone's. This is a very good defensive line. You know, some of the names you know, Sweat and Simmons. It's the kind of defensive line that I do think has a decent chance of neutralizing Benny Snell. Once again, this is probably a stay away for me, and yet if I was forced to pick a side here, I guess I'm going with the favorite on the road, Mississippi State. That's too many points, though, for me to feel too confident about that. That is not a my bookie best bet. I will give you my bookie best bet on Tennessee simply because who is Florida to be a 4.5-point road favorite against anybody right now? This is a fairly simple evaluation. Neither of these teams are very good, so if you're going to get 4.5 points, you might as well go ahead and take that. I'll take that with the Vols here. I'll have my popcorn ready for this game because this may be a classic case of dog fans hoping they both lose, but that should be at least interesting to watch. And I'll take a Tennessee side here as a my bookie best bet just because right now they're getting about 4.5 points, depending on when you look for that and find that. Then finally, Arkansas at Auburn. Auburn's a big, big home favorite here because Arkansas is really one of the worst SEC teams we've seen in quite some time. But things may not be peachy at Auburn right now either. I saw some online chatter this morning. There's a chance that Nate Craig Myers, I guess, is considering leaving that program. I know they've already lost another player to transfer here this week. Auburn's obviously going to win this game easily. Be careful in assuming it's necessarily going to be 30 points, though, because that Jordan-Hare Stadium could be pretty deflated on the heels of what happened last Saturday against LSU. This is an easy Auburn win, but the point spread, depending on when you look for it at MyBookie, it's going to be pretty high. So be careful with that. Don't just assume that's a MyBookie best bet because it's a good team versus bad team, and we'll make that your SEC through. And as I said, good luck with those bets at MyBookie here this weekend as well. and on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. Let's turn our attention back to the Georgia Bulldogs against Missouri on Saturday, and let's preview Missouri here a little bit, because I think some of the things that Kirby Smart has said about the Tigers here this week have been pretty interesting, including the fact that this may be a slightly different team led by Coach Barry Odom in 2018 than it was in 2017. Some changes afoot here may be brought upon by a last name, at least, that Georgia fans know. Here is Smart talking about his relationship with Missouri coach Barry Odom and kind of why Missouri may look a little bit different this year than it did in Athens a year ago.
I've gotten to know him well, got a lot of respect for him. He's a really good ball coach. I thought the job he did last year was just remarkable, to go through the tough start they started with and then to come in and really play us tough and then to go on a 9-1 streak is what they've been on. And they got a really good football team, obviously a premier quarterback in the country, a premier wideout in the country. They're really big. They've got massive tight ends. Their front on the defense is leading the SEC in rushing defense, and they're really physical up front. So when you look at them as a whole, they're built SEC built. They're really a physical team, and I think he's done a tremendous job. They've made a commitment to the run game this year with the hiring of Derek Dooley. They're trying to run the ball and be more physical, and they've done that in their first games. They got good backs.
I take Smart seriously and at his word when he talks about Missouri being bigger. He said that enough that must really matter to him. I also think it's interesting that he's predicting that Derek Dooley is going to be a little bit more of a run-oriented offensive coordinator. Hard to tell much about Missouri yet. They haven't played much of a schedule. You know, nothing that Smart says there makes me change my opinion about this being an easy win for Georgia, even the thoughts about, you know, Smart thinking that Drew Locke's a premier quarterback. Obviously, his draft status potentially makes that the case, but Drew Locke doesn't scare me away from thinking this is still going to be an easy win for the Dogs. With Locke in mind, Smart talked a little bit more about what makes him so impressive.
I don't know if his arm can get any stronger, so his arm is... He can make every throw. He threw the ball almost out of the stadium last year on us. I think the biggest thing is his maturity level, his confidence. He's seen the coverages. He's seen the checks. He understands where he wants to go with the ball. I mean, he's got as fast a release as I've ever seen. I mean, he can get the ball out so quick, and he does such a good job of keying your defenders and knowing where to go with the ball. You can tell they really work hard on it, and I think he's just more mature. I think anytime you play in this conference and you go the venues he's gone to have 3 years under your belt, or, you know, being in your third year, I mean, it makes it a lot more comforting. He throws the ball with purpose, and he puts them in the right play a lot, and he's a really good athlete. You know, the guy takes off running on some zone reads and keeps the ball, and he exposes people. I mean, he runs for 20 and 30 when he takes off and does it. And he just doesn't do it very often. You can tell he's a good athlete. So I got a lot of respect for him, and you can tell the way he runs and scrambles and throws the ball, he's a competitor.
Kirby Smart's obviously doing what he's supposed to do here, which is, you know, talk up his opponent. I think, though, that for the most part, the chatter among media class about Missouri this week is coming because there's just an insatiable hunger right now to see Georgia play any kind of game that's going to be interesting. But if you want to put this game in a category, I think it's far more likely that this game ends up being in the category of games like the South Carolina blowout a lot more so than. A kind of close game like you might see against LSU or Auburn. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of my thought on that. I mean, overall, I just don't think, Drew Locke aside here, Drew Locke included, I don't quite think that this Missouri team's good enough to challenge this Georgia team on Saturday. But obviously Smart's seen some things that he likes. As we sort of transition towards Friday tomorrow, we'll talk even more about, you know, what to expect from Missouri on the field in that particular game. Let me also add this. Our Gator Hater Countdown, we do it every day. We believe that 37 days from right now, Georgia goes back to Jacksonville against those lousy, stinking Gators. We think Georgia wins again. It's our Gator Hater Countdown right here on a Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. Appreciate you allowing us doing that every day. One more thing to mention. Obviously, we're aware that J.R. Reed was not spotted at Georgia practice yesterday. You know, that's a potential issue worth paying attention to. We don't know enough about that yet. I'm assuming that's probably not that serious, but that's obviously something we'll monitor and talk more about as we get closer to the game. Georgia does need all hands on deck in the secondary. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Dog Nation Daily.